In her novels, Curtis Sittenfeld has explored adolescent angst, alternative American history, and the power of identical twinship. And in real life, she battled AI to see who could write a better beach read. Now she's out with a new collection of short stories called Show Don't Tell that explores themes of marriage, friendship, fame, and ambition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Curtis Sittenfeld will be in town Friday, February 28th for an event called Show Don't Tell, an evening with Curtis Sittenfeld at the Mercantile Library. She joins me now in this recorded conversation. Thanks for being here, Curtis.
Thank you.
You have a new book coming out, as I mentioned. It's this collection of short stories. But before we talk about that, I have to ask you about this challenge with ChatGPT. Where did that idea come from?
So actually, it came from me, although I was very ambivalent about it. But there was an editor at the New York Times who said, you know, it would be so much fun if we could figure out a way to get your fiction into the opinion section, which is, you know, obviously it's sort of an unusual like space for fiction. And so we had a little bit of back and forth about like, well, what is a beach read? You know, should I write a beach read? It was summer 2024. And then I kind of had this AI adjacent idea where what if we fed the same prompt to me and to AI, and then sort of, you know, we both write stories and readers guess who wrote which. Mm. And so that's what happened.
Yeah. What were the prompts?
We gave a list that was like maybe 15 prompts that were kind of like a combination of things that I like to write about. So sort of like, you know, neuroses and like boarding school and kissing and then things that would be in a beach story, you know, like sunscreen and, you know, the ocean. And then readers also could write in, but from the sort of you know, existing list, the top three vote getters were lust, regret, and kissing, which I thought was super funny and super revealing of people's preoccupations. And then it was also wild and fascinating where, like, you know, of the write-ins, it could be something along the lines of like, you know, your thighs sticking to a chair on a sweaty afternoon, or it could be like regret over your marriage, or like it's a really wide range.
No kidding. That's quite a spectrum there. Were you at all intimidated to be writing head to, I guess you would call it head to head with AI?
I mean, I was actually genuinely interested in what the outcome would be. And I don't know. I mean, it's funny because I've done a few sort of, I don't know, like potentially high profile fiction projects. And I always feel like it's always an experiment. You know, the quality of what I write will always be subjective. So there always will be people like I could tell you before the project with AI ran that some people would definitely say like they're both terrible, or like the AI is better. Like it's, I mean, I have, you know, my first novel came out 20 years ago, and I have learned many times you can't please everyone. So I thought it would be, again, just interesting. I don't think it's kind of a parlor game. Like it's not really definitive.
What did you expect to get out of it?
Well, I was sort of curious because also the editor said, you know, write in the style of Curtis Sittenfeld. And I am one of many, many writers where our books were used to, you know, sort of to teach ChatGPT without our permission and without compensation. So it's like, you know, how much does the system know how I write, or even how does AI kind of define like how and write? So, and it's interesting because when you start, like if you feed a prompt in and then also, you know, AI is like changing very rapidly, or ChatGPT is changing very rapidly. So this could be sort of outdated. What I'm saying could be outdated, but when we were doing it last summer, if you feed a prompt, it gives you this kind of soulless but proficient story. And then if you refine the prompt, it actually gives you a story that it feels like is like 98% the same. So weirdly, it feels kind of impressive at first, and then it feels actually less impressive as you try to refine it. But maybe if you refine it with particular prompts, that wouldn't be the case.
How did you approach your story in terms of the research you did, any pre-writing, all those kinds of things?
Well, for all my fiction, I do research. So, you know, like this particular story, there was like a man in St. Paul who likes to bike. So I sort of asked a friend about, like, if you're a serious biker, you know, where do you go? Or like, I went to this particular park in St. Paul where parts of the story take place just to kind of have a handle. I live in Minneapolis and I had never been to the park. It's called Como. But so, I mean, and again, does that count as research to like go to a park on a summer evening? I don't know. Some people might just call that like living.
And how long did it take ChatGPT to write its story?
I think it took about 20 seconds.
Wow. Well, I'm going to tell you, I read the two stories without knowing which was yours, of course, because that was the shtick in the New York Times. I'm talking in this recorded interview with author Curtis Sittenfeld about her battle with ChatGPT and her new collection of short stories called Show, Don't Tell. You have remarked in the past about creating the alternate reality that you live in while working and the pleasure you can derive from this when it's a particularly fun reality story, like romantic comedy, for example, that was about SNL. Was Show Don't Tell particularly fun for you to write? I mean, not all of your books have been kind of quote unquote fun, have they?
Well, you know, so I did not write this. I did not sit down and write 12 stories one after another. The oldest story in here, which is the title story, appeared in The New Yorker in 2017. And so I feel like each of these stories, I was interested enough in the topic matter that I, you know, made it a priority to like spend several weeks or a few months writing this story, like trying to capture this moment in the characters' lives. So I don't, I wouldn't say that the stories were like designed to be escapist for me, but I think I found them all compelling and interesting, whether it's writing about race, or, you know, whether it's writing about marriage or artistic ambition. I mean, those are all very rich topics.
Your first story in Show Don't Tell, which I really loved, is about this graduate student who's waiting to hear if she gets a big fellowship. When you're writing a story like that, is there a message you're trying to deliver, or is it more just kind of, hey, I want to, this is the story that I want to tell?
I would say it's the latter. I mean, I think that if I have a particular message I want to deliver, I should write an opinion piece. I shouldn't write fiction. Like I think fiction is great for exploring ambiguity and confusion and not, you know, clarity or definitive viewpoints.
I also really enjoyed The Marriage Clock. It took twists and turns that I wasn't expecting. I think that gets to your point earlier about how, you know, AI is kind of a cliche factory and actual human writers who are good at what they do try to avoid that. How much do you try to surprise your readers in your stories?
I do think that surprise can be really satisfying. And there's this, you know, sort of writing truism that an ending should be surprising yet inevitable. So I think that especially if you kind of feel like, oh, it was set up for this to happen, but it's still surprising, that's especially satisfying for a reader. But I mean, I think something I try to do is allow characters to be really complicated and contradictory the way that real people are, and not to like you know, sort of set someone up as a straw man or not to have a character be one dimensional. Because that's boring for me as a writer. And I think it's boring for readers.
So you don't worry about having kind of a good guy or a bad guy or somebody who's not sympathetic enough or too sympathetic. That doesn't go into your process.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. In one of your stories, you revisit a character from prep. And why did you want to spend more time with her in particular?
So, you know, my first novel, Prep, came out 20 years ago. And it's about this girl who goes to a fancy Massachusetts boarding school from Indiana. And I was definitely, I've been asked over the years, like, what happened to her? And I think sometimes what people are saying is, you know, was she sort of self-sabotaging and neurotic when she was a boarding school student because that's essentially who she is, or because she was a teenager? And so this sort of answers that question. It sort of gives you almost like sometimes if you see a movie and then the credits show people like 5 years later, 20 years later, like there's just kind of an element of fun in that, I think. And it also, like, I think Prep does have a special place in some readers' hearts. And I think that if I had written a sequel, it might have felt like too much pressure or maybe like opportunistic, but it seemed kind of like splitting the difference between doing nothing and writing a novel to write a short story about her.
How often do you develop a character like that you think, you know, I really want to learn more about that person in a 5 years later or 10 years later or whatever kind of sense?
Not usually. It's the exception, definitely, rather than the norm.
I also love the premise of A for Alone, which is another story in your collection. A married artist embarks on a creative project intended to disprove the so-called Mike Pence rule. Talk about the Mike Pence rule.
So there was an article in the Washington Post, probably in like 2000, maybe 17-ish, that talked about how Mike Pence chose to never be alone with a woman professionally or personally who is not his wife. And it's actually known as the Billy Graham rule, but because of that article, it kind of became known as the Mike Pence rule. And so in that story, a woman decides to kind of like intentionally flout or break that rule with surprising yet inevitable consequences.
What made you want to explore that?
So it's very provocative. I mean, it's a super sexist rule because it's kind of like, well, if you're never going to spend time, you know, if you're, it's also, it's extraordinarily like heteronormative. If you're going to say like, I'm a man and I'm not going to ever take a meeting one-on-one with a woman, like, it's sort of like, well, what implications does that have for her career? What implications does that have for your career? But so, I mean, I just thought, but it's also like, again, I don't want to, I mean, I'm certainly a progressively or a politically progressive person. And I'm, you know, was not a fan of this rule. But then I think you can also say, you know, like sometimes people do have affairs. Sometimes men and women have affairs. Sometimes men and men have affairs. Sometimes women and women. I mean, there's all the genders that can have affairs. So it's like that stuff can coexist with, you know, like there, some people put very restrictive guardrails around themselves to try to prevent what they perceive as misbehavior. And then some people don't, and different people have different definitions of what misbehavior even is. So I think that's all very fertile territory to explore in fiction.
Your stories are so witty, they're raw, they're also very lusty at times. And what I love about them is how many of your characters are in midlife. They have kids, sometimes they have stretch marks or hemorrhoids, they have lots of baggage. Do you see that as a recipe for rich and, you know, even sexy romance?
That question you just asked me, it was really a journey from witty, raw, lusty, stretch marks, hemorrhoids. I mean, I think we can just let listeners decide how enticing that combination. I mean, yeah, I mean, I do, I think, okay, so I'm 49, and I do think that middle age is a very rich, juicy, interesting time of life. Like, I just feel like everyone, by the time you're, like 40, 50, whatever, you've definitely had probably crazy and challenging and unexpected experiences. And I think that's like super interesting. And I also, in some ways, I do like to think I'm challenging some of the sort of default cultural narratives around aging, especially aging for women, where it's almost like we're supposed to feel really bad about getting older and be so obsessed with like our appearances and do all these things to look younger. And it's like, but actually, like you're so much more interesting when you're older than you were when you were younger. And I'm also not convinced that a lot of the things that people do to look younger make them look better, but that's my own opinion.
So, do you think you'll continue to be interested in this as you age? Do you expect your characters to age too, or do you find yourself ever wanting to kind of go back in time and revisit younger days a little bit more?
I mean, it depends. It really depends on the story, but there actually are several stories in the collection where the protagonist is looking back. Like, she might be 50, but she's looking back on this episode from when she was, 22. And something I think the passage of time is wildly fascinating, and how our perspective on events can change. Like, the events remain static and our perspective can shift very dramatically in terms of what that means, or like how we perceive the other people that we were interacting with decades ago.
Do you think there's something freeing about kind of that aging process and maybe just not caring if you're using all the latest potions and creams and procedures to try to look younger?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's like, I do think that, I mean, I guess also as you get older, you've had more experiences. So I ideally, I mean, this isn't always true, but like you're sort of more unfazed because you're kind of like, oh, I've seen a version of this before. Like, I've had a falling out with a close friend before, and I survived it. Or I've had this professional setback before and I survived it. So, I guess there's the hope that you have perspective and stability.
Well, this has been lots of fun. I've been talking with author Curtis Sittenfeld. She'll be in town Friday, February 28th for an event at the Mercantile Library in downtown Cincinnati. You can find a link with more information on our website, wvxu.org. Thank you so much for your time today, Curtis.
Sure, thank you.
This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.